Welcome to Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro, powered by Beyond, where we dive heart first into all things events in the nonprofit world. Hi, I'm Amy Milne, your host and CEO of Beyond and the Nonprofit Event Collective, where we believe that your events matter. You're not just hosting an event, you're inviting people to join you in changing the world. We're here to talk tricks of the trade and share tales from the trenches so you can produce epic events that inspire participants, raise more money, and change lives. Let's dive in. I'm beyond excited to welcome Lynn Wilson, Chief Development Officer, POGO, Pediatric Oncology Group of Ontario, to Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro podcast today. Not only is Lynn a veteran fundraiser with a long and very successful career in the nonprofit world, she is a dear friend, colleague, and partner of ours here at Beyond. Lynn has led teams at Heart and Stroke, the Ontario Lung Association, SickKids Foundation, and now POGO, again, Pediatric Oncology Group of Ontario, say that five times fast, to raise millions of dollars through signature and third-party events. Lynn is an advocate and believer in all things events, and I know you're going to pick up some amazing tips that you can incorporate immediately into your events by listening to our conversation today. Let's get real. Lynn, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to the next little bit and chatting all things events.
Yeah, you and I have worked together over the years in various capacities in events. We're in the decade, I would think, at this point.
Yes, well, I've been 10 years at COGO, so previous to that, SickKids for 5, so 15 years.
That is insane. That is crazy. 5 years ago when I joined SickKids, Lynn was my partner. She was running the third-party event portfolio, and I joined the team to partner with Lynn to start the signature event program at SickKids. And I always look back to that time with extraordinary fondness. We did so many things for SickKids. We launched so many new programs in both our portfolios and pushed some serious limits. I thought it was amazing. It was amazing.
It was definitely a time.
Yes. You know, do the great camp adventure and, you know, what we did with the third-party event portfolio and or what you did in your team and then launching, you know, SickKids signature events was pretty extraordinary. But most recently, or over the last 10 years now, I've had the pleasure of working with you in a volunteer capacity and then as an agency partner in changing and growing events at POGO, Pediatric Oncology Group of Ontario. And so before we jump into that, Lynn, I just did a bit of where you've been, but tell our listeners who you are and where you've been in your career.
Well, I'm proud and a little bit anxious to say that I have been a career fundraiser and I've been in the fundraising space for now well over 30 years. Before fundraising was a university degree or a college diploma, I worked originally with the Heart and Stroke Foundation for quite a number of years where I was very fortunate to have a variety of positions that really gave me the excellent foundation, I think, that I had to move up in my career. Left Heart and Stroke Foundation where I was doing events and I was an area coordinator of a geographic area and did all fundraising over to the Lung Association where, again, I managed an area geographically, but then was brought in specifically to launch a new school-based program called Laps for Lungs. And from there, I went over to SickKids as we spoke about and then landed finally at POGO, which, as I mentioned, 10 years.
That's crazy. Like 10, it feels like yesterday, but then holy cow. I mean, I guess there was that whole blip in the middle of life a little bit there with the worldwide pandemic. So Lynn, well, it's funny because I know this about you is that events are not necessarily your favorite thing. I mean, I believe you are a true fundraiser. And even though events haven't always been your favorite thing, you kind of spent a lot of time in that space in your career, which I always find amusing. Tell me a little bit about, you know, why events aren't your favorite thing, but yet you're extraordinarily good at it and making sure they happen and raise money.
Events are a fun thing. I like to think of myself as a fun person, but I think probably in reflection, it's just all the stress and the focus and the time that it takes to, you know, develop an event and then take it through its life cycle to actually completing the event. And then it feels like you get, you know, maybe a few days before you have to start thinking about it all over again. But I also appreciate events for the role that they play in fundraising and being a lever to your prospect pipeline and bringing people into your organization, experiencing your cause for the first time, hopefully having a fantastic first impression of your cause, and then, you know, stewarding them and cultivating people to bring them even closer to the organization outside of the event that they first arrived at.
For sure. And I think, I mean, you say stress, and it's so funny because I don't find them stressful at all, which is why I guess you and I have always worked well together, because the things that I probably don't love to do cause me stress, and you, the things you don't like to do don't cause me stress. So it's worked out really well. You speak about pipeline and bringing people in through events. Where have you seen some really huge successes there, or big or small successes in terms of events leading to people joining your pipeline and joining your organization?
Well, speaking specifically at Pogo currently, I would say probably 60% of our new donors to the organization have experienced us and come in through an event, whether that's a signature event or whether that's a third party event. And so it really is incredibly important to our pipeline to have people come in that way. I would say also, when I think of, you know, just my role at SickKids, and you mentioned, you know, overseeing the third party portfolio, that was over 1,000 events a year and $12 million in revenue. So I know that might, as people listen to this, it might kind of boggle the mind that there's, you know, that much activity happening. But when you think of those people that come in, and then they also come in, but they don't come in individually. They come in individually, but if it's a peer-to-peer fundraiser, they also bring their friends and family and their business networks as well. So, you know, if you extrapolate one person times and on average 10 people that also come as a result of that one person's participation, you can see the enormous opportunity that events bring to the fundraising portfolio when you're really building and working on your prospect pipeline.
Yeah, I love that you say that. And 60% in my mind is a big number. And that says that when your events, we're going to speak of the events that you have at Pogo that have helped do this for your organization. But 60% is a big number. And I think it's important that people look at those numbers because, you know, to your first point of like the stress and the amount of work and things like that. I mean, the payoff is financial, but it's also the prospect of what can come from those people if you steward them properly and keep them engaged through the events or through the other things that you're doing at the organization. One of the things that I shared just before we hit record was I was just recently in February, I was down in Washington at the Peer-to-Peer Forum, which is a conference of, you know, peer-to-peer fundraisers from all over the world. And what was really interesting, a couple of things stuck out for me. Two big themes was, one was really investing, you know, post-pandemic, was really investing in staff and understanding that there's so many new people in our field that don't have some of that legacy training and experience in events. And so that's one. The other one that I thought was really great to see and really made me think about the work that we've done together and what you've done at Pogo with your team is a lot of people are looking really closely at their event portfolio, closer than they ever have, which is like a dream come true for me, because it's all I want people to do is make better events so people want to go and raise more money. But I was really proud sitting there watching what some of the people were doing, because I was like, wait a second, we did this at Pogo. Like, Lynn, you had the foresight 7-8 years ago when you joined Pogo and looked at the event portfolio to go like, this doesn't match who we are. And the events that you were running weren't necessarily going to take you to that next level and start bringing in that 60% of new people to your org. So tell me a little bit about, you know, having that foresight and what you did as an organization to literally throw something that was working out and start new and grow.
Sure. Well, when I arrived at Pogo, Pogo had been doing a gala event for 10 years plus, and a very successful gala that generated more than 2/3 of our income, which from a very high level perspective is great, but it also represents a lot of risk if something was to go wrong. And this was pre-COVID, so we certainly could recognize that if we were still doing that activity and COVID had hit, we would have extremely challenged with our revenue. But we were also seeing some signs that the event was fatiguing in terms of sponsorship. We were also seeing a really interesting trend where we were still successful in securing sponsors, but the demographic of the sponsor to attending the event as a part of their sponsorable benefit, the people that we wanted in the room weren't attending anymore. And so we had built the event on the night of to generate also additional streams of revenue, as so many do, that was really dependent on having that high net worth individual in the room. And suddenly we had non-high net worth and sponsorship, you know, made up a significant amount of the revenue of that event. And so I would suggest that our attendees at the event, again, probably 75% were there because of their corporate sponsorship. The other piece that we had to look at, obviously, as you mentioned, was that it was a really prohibitive event for our community that we serve. People just could not afford a $750 ticket. And so we looked at identifying and managing some of that risk and also the opportunity that came with a refresh on what we wanted to do. And so we really felt the time was right to take a look at it. Gosh, I think that would have been now 5 or 6 years ago, and change in terms of being able to attract the demographic that we wanted and that we needed, and also change the event to match who was in the room so that we didn't have the live auction items that were going for, you know, $10,000. We really wanted it to be a celebration. Certainly, of course, you have to make money from it and you want to make money from it, but we wanted to just be more inclusive. And by being more inclusive, it also meant being able to bring people to the event, even if they physically weren't able to come to the event, because Pogo is an Ontario-based charity and the gala was definitely Toronto-centric. And so while we knew that our new event was going to still be based downtown Toronto, we knew we also had to find ways to include our community that lived outside of the Toronto area.
Yeah. And I love it because I know when I joined as a development committee member, I came to the gala. The gala was spectacular. It was unbelievable. It was probably one of the best in this city. And, you know, I think it was such a brave move for yourself and your team and the volunteers to say, like, we've got to rethink this. And what I love is really what came next in terms of, you know, not just planning a new gala in a different place. It was really, how do we create an event concept and construct that matches who we are? Like, you speak of your audience and your demographic. And I remember you and I having many conversations about, like, okay, so we're kids cancer. Like, that's, we serve families. Yes, you're not going to invite, you know, young folks to a gala. We still want an adult friendly event. But how do we take, you know, an event construct that works in terms of a cocktail party gala kind of concept and make it make sense to the cause? And that's where pajamas came to be. Do you want to talk a little bit about pajamas and why, you know, you've dove into the pajama world with Pogo?
For sure. And I'm laughing a little bit because it hasn't been without its growing pains, for sure. In getting the corporate community particularly to embrace the concept of coming to an event in your pajamas. But for Pogo and for families and children who are on their cancer journey, pajamas means something very different than what pajamas means for you and I. You know, pajamas mean being sick at home, means car rides to the hospital, time spent in the hospital. And for this community, whether it's children, you know, 0 to 10, or teenage community, 16 to 22, comfort is incredibly important for these kids and these young adults. And so we wanted to have a thematic framework that spoke to standing in solidarity with these individuals as they go through the cancer journey.
Yeah. And I love that. I mean, it was when we were on a back patio somewhere having coffee, not wine that time. It was definitely coffee and tea. And you were kind of like, can we do pajamas? Like, does that make sense? And it was like, oh my God, yes. And it just like the whole, you kind of like gave me the seed and then we just sort of blew it up from there. And it's amazing watching how that concept and construct has really taken off. I mean, I remember our first Pogo pajama party and, you know, there was, you know, a third of the room in pajamas and the rest in suits. And then the following year it was like that completely flipped. And now if you show up in your suit, you look out of place because everybody else is fully pajamaed out. Like, it's so amazing to see how the community has embraced it and embraced it from a, a concept which takes you, nobody else has a pajama party in Ontario the way that we do. And it's just amazing how people have embraced the theme, but also what it's done is that theme, they've really embraced the cause and really understand the meaning. And so when people put their pajamas on that night to come, we know that there is so much more to that than they ever thought would ever be when they threw on a pair of pajamas to go to a party. Like it's phenomenal, the feeling in the room when you experience it.
And it's fun. I mean, right. It's you know, definitely got that thematic framework. It very much speaks to the cause of children and young adults with cancer, but it's a fun event. And, you know, how many events do we have in Toronto where you don't have to go out and buy a ball gown? You can show up in super comfy clothes. And I think people, particularly this year after the hiatus of COVID, you know, and we had quite a number of new sponsors this year, which was really encouraging. And, you know, at the event that night, I had so many of them come up to me and say, oh my gosh, this event is so different. This is so much fun. Like, this is not what I thought. And if I had known it was going to feel and look like this ahead of time, I could have gotten a whole more of my colleagues to come out. So to me, that's the opportunity is that, you know, they experience it and they have a fantastic time. It's very much though still connected to the cause, and the cause is amplified at the event, and people go away going, that's an event I want to go to next year.
Yeah. And absolutely. And we definitely saw this year. And I think what the other thing that the pajamas does with infusing the theme in a fun way with a very heavy subject is that people can explain that to people. Like, I went to a pajama party. Why? I went to a pajama party because Pogo helps families and children, you know, dealing with cancer. And so I wore my pajamas because of that. Like, so we were able to take something like fun and amazing and understandable already to a community. Like, our people know what pajamas are. And now we've just added a layer of meaning to that makes, you know, which is so, makes so much sense to someone and easy for them to give that like quick elevator pitch in terms of like, why'd you wear your pajamas last night? Which you don't always get if you're so far away in terms of like what you're doing from an event concept and not infusing who you are somewhere. What the pajama party is one thing, and that's what you do. We do with our grownups and you know, and sponsors and things like that. The other thing that you did with pajamas is we came up with a DIY program, a do-it-yourself program to help bolster your third-party program. So tell us a little bit about PJs and Pancakes and how that works.
We wanted to add a peer-to-peer event. We didn't have, other than in third-party events, we didn't really have a signature event that was a peer-to-peer campaign. And so we married pajama theme up with our Pajamas and Pancakes event. Originally, the goal was to have it be primarily a corporate event. But what we've seen in the years that we've rolled it out is that, and perhaps maybe again, this is like what we are challenged with the PJ party, is it's hard to get the corporate market to embrace that really until they see it. And not to say that we haven't had companies take this event on, which we have, and very successfully, I might add. But we also saw a really big uptake in schools, which is funny because that's never was our original intent. But schools, you know, do pajama days already. And so it seemed a natural fit for them. And of course, we've had a bit of a pause with that with COVID, but we anticipate that we're going to see that trend coming back. But we're also seeing a trend coming back in other ways around social networks. And so, for example, we've had a couple of golf tournaments that have taken the theme on and done like a pajama golf tournament and incorporated the pancakes. The pancakes can be, you know, an add-on to it, or if a company doesn't really want to do the pajamas because they're having trouble internally getting traction on that idea, they can do a pancake breakfast. They can do a pancake lunch without having to don the pajamas. And so it's nice because they complement each other if you want to do both, but if you just want to do one thing, there's an opportunity there as well.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's been really neat to see how people, you know, you built the framework and you gave people a theme and it's always up and running. And I think one of the things that's really neat and interesting, and so when people go to check it out, is that while it's living all year round, so people can do these parties all year round, the seasons change and the ideas around how to wear your pajamas in the fall or how to make, you know, pancakes in the spring, you know, maybe you'll put, you know, Easter eggs in them in the spring when you do that for Easter versus, you know, throwing some, you know, whatever you do in the winter, like you're going to throw something else on them. I don't know. Candy canes, but you've created something, again, that's a simple concept and something that's understandable, and then people get to take it on it as their own. Like, I know you have one group that's literally taken it on. You've got one group that does a full champagne breakfast. You talk about the Eggs Benedict being the best Eggs Benedict you ever had. Or you couldn't believe they made Eggs Benedict for so many people.
Yeah, that's an event. Yes, that's an event called Sunday Best that actually started originally out in the Newmarket area with three kids from the same family, supporters of Polo, through another event that then the next generation really wanted to get involved and do something. And they started by doing a pajamas and pancakes at home where they created boxes and put boxes together, and people sold the boxes and they were delivered to their home and they could have a brunch, and everything you needed to have that brunch was in the box, and they got all of the stuff sponsored. And then they also had an option for people that they could purchase a box and send it to a family with a child that was currently going through a cancer treatment program. So though that event happened for a few years, and then they wanted to actually migrate it to a real live event. And last year was their first year doing that at Steam Whistle in the springtime around Mother's Day. And they kept the breakfast pancake theme. So while people didn't come in their pajamas, they were served pancakes and they were served cereal bars and really breakfast for lunch.
I love that. And as I mentioned, you keep talking about how you were amazed at how the Eggs Benedict was like so good and served so well. So one of the things, like, so as people are listening and, you know, they get to hear what they're hearing from us is like, make, you know, a theme that matches. And, you know, I'm a true creative in my head, and I'm always, we can always find a theme and that matches the cause. It just takes a minute. But one of the things it'd be great for you to share with the listeners, like, what advice would you give? So someone's listening to this and they're like, oh, we've been trying to do this in our own organization. What advice and lessons learned would you share with our listeners into, you know, how to go about doing this? Maybe how you did it and what you would have learned that maybe you could do better, or you would say, like, if you're going to do this, do these things.
That is a great question. I think number one, find, if you're not a creative soul, find somebody in your network that is. I think that was our first step. Definitely wasn't going to come from me. So I knew that to find somebody like Amy, and it was Amy, that had that creativity and that ability to see that thematic framework and have the vision. I think the second piece of advice is be brave, but be patient, because I wouldn't say that the event, as I mentioned with PJ Party, especially, you know, It took a few years of success, small success, and then grow, and helping people feel comfortable when maybe they felt uncomfortable at the beginning. So whether that's putting on your pajamas and I'm uncomfortable to go to a pajama party in downtown Toronto straight from work out of my suit, but also patient and comfortable in the risk that you take on in moving away from maybe a tried and true activity into something brand new where you don't really know if the revenue is going to follow, and to plan, to really, really plan appropriately, to know that, you know, every event, no matter how good it is, has a life cycle, and you're probably not going to break even necessarily on the first year or the second year even. But if you stay true to the vision and you're patient and you build your revenue appropriately to allow for that, you'll have success.
Yeah, I think being brave is huge. And you know, sometimes it's going to mean saying this same thing over and over again when people are like, nope, we don't like it. You're like, yep, but I know it's going to work. So it's being brave and trusting. Sometimes it means you're going to have to show up at a meeting in your pajamas just to show people that it's possible. So, you know, to show people that risk isn't so scary, which I believe we did at a few meetings when we took the concept to some of the board members. I think we did show up in pajamas. I think what you did as an organization, you know, and was huge, and you pushed and people and it paid off. And I think it's one of the points you said that's really important is it's not going to pay off in the first year. It doesn't mean it's going to be a failure. It's going to be a success, but just what are you looking at? And it is that growth period. And, you know, we say to our clients a lot of the time, it's like, it's that 3-year mark. Like, where are we at three? You got to get to 3 years, right? Like, I feel like at year two, you're at 10 feet from gold. And then at 3 years, then you can really evaluate, where do you need to change? Do you need to add something different? but you've got to have faith and belief in what you've chosen to do for sure, and keep, you know, holding true to that, to what you said, that vision.
I think that the other thing that I haven't mentioned yet about the value of this event, but in events in general, is that also while it does add to your prospect pipeline and helps you grow, it also generates, for the most part, unrestricted revenue. Unless, of course, you're taking your event and restricting it to a particular cause around, but often in events, you don't have to do that. Unrestricted revenue, as we know in the fundraising world, is king. So you want to make sure, again, if you're looking at your entire 360 portfolio of fundraised dollars, there has to be an appropriate portion of that that's coming from unrestricted revenue.
Yeah, for sure. I know that's a really good point, Lynn. And I think in keeping it unrestricted, because I know we have this conversation, we've had it together and it's with others, is that we almost, as the nonprofit organizations, we feel we need to over-explain the restricted and the unrestricted dollars, where people, especially when it comes to events, like you said, you just have this opportunity to put out an event for the cause and share that story the way that you want it, versus needing to dial all the way down to what that, you know, restricted or unrestricted means. For most consumers, which are most of our customers, they don't know unless we make it a big deal. And I think keeping your events as unrestricted as you can in an organization that has restricted funds, I think is a huge point for people to take and think about.
For sure. And as we move through this time of economic uncertainty, we know also that events are often the ones that are felt in terms of any kind of a downward revenue trend when the economy gets tight. And the other really important piece, I think, that we all as fundraisers have to pay attention to is the next generation of fundraisers. Mm-hmm. I saw a report just last week that indicated the largest growth in giving in Canada came from, I believe, the demographic of the 20-something group. And so when you're planning your events, keep that demographic in mind. Very, very important. And also corporations, in terms of wanting to get their employees back to in-person office activities, are going to be relying on social activities to keep their current employees happy and engaged, but also to align themselves with a cause to attract that younger demographic that is looking for an employer that gives back.
Yep, for sure. So many nuggets of gold in here, Lynn. I mean, I know how brilliant you are as a fundraiser and a leader and passionate about what you do and the causes in which you serve. And I'm so grateful I've been your partner and friend through all of this. I'm so grateful you took the time today to share this with our listeners. If people are interested in reaching out to you, Lynn, and learning more about what you're doing at your organization and maybe picking your brain, how can people get a hold of you?
People can get a hold of me at lwilson@pogo.ca.
Perfect. We'll put all that in the show notes. Lynn, thank you so much for your time and for your expertise and everything you've done for the industry and all of your many years. And, you know, you look super cute when you wear pajamas to an event. So there we go. Amazing. Thanks so much, Lynn.
Thanks, Amy, for inviting me.
Thanks so much for listening and doing good in the world. We see you. We can't wait for you to join us next time when we hear from another good human who will share their story, along with tips and tricks that will help you execute extraordinary events that are sure to have a lasting impact on your participants, beneficiaries, donors, and colleagues. Make sure you follow Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to rate and review the show so other nonprofit event pros just like you can find our podcast so they too can create events that matter. Tune in next week to laugh, cry, and cheer with us on another episode of Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro. See you soon. Hey, good human. Are you hitting roadblocks with your events and marketing and need a bit of help to take it to the next level? We've got you. Sign up for our monthly hot seat coaching, where we will answer your questions live on the podcast. That's right. You'll get to join me, Amy Milne, and my colleague, Lisa Cohen, right here on Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro podcast. And we will share our expertise to help you with your specific questions. Sound good? Great. Fill out the quick form by following the link in the show notes and we'll take it from there. We're stoked to have you on the podcast, good human listener, to guide you through your current challenges. Keep it real.